Here to take your calls is Dr. Ron Scharf from the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, New York. Dr. Scharf, a 1985 graduate of Veterinary College at Cornell, extensive background in conventional and not so conventional veterinary medicine. Dr. Scharf, welcome back to the program. How are you, sir?
I'm great. Thanks a lot, Ray. Great introduction as usual.
Well,
it's a pleasure to be here.
We just ad lib, right? The number to call is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Get in early if you can. The lines are sure to fill up fast. We have two open lines at the moment. And you can also tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop, one word, WAMC VOXPOP, and try to, in the limited characters you have, be as detailed as you can. You can also check in on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Provide as much info as you can on your pet, including their age and sex, if you submit a question online. And anything new to report before we go to the phones, Doctor?
Oh, there's always new things. There's always new things, Ray. I felt bad about the animals as well as the people down south in the downstate that were having trouble, which I still think is pretty active. I think that there are people that have had massive changes. And I've asked amongst my clients if anyone's interested in contributing, donating, anything like that. I still think it's a worthwhile thing to do. I saw footage on YouTube about my hometown, Oceanside, New York, on Long Island that was underwater.
Yeah,
it was pretty dramatic. Pretty dramatic.
All right, well, let's go to the phones, and we start off with Dan in Newfane, Vermont. Dan, you're first with Dr. Scharf. How are you?
Hi, thanks. We recently got a plot hound from the Humane Society. She's about a year old. And we had her spayed, and it turns out the spay was also a late-term abortion. I don't know if that was what the problem was, but since that time, she has this pathology where she wakes up in the morning, and she just looks like she's ready to die. She'll go outside and almost wander aimlessly out into the woods and just lay down somewhere, and if you go up and tap, rub her, sometimes around her neck, she'll you know, yelp as if she's hurting. Sometimes she vomits. Sometimes she has a hard time squatting to go to the bathroom. And if you give her an aspirin, some days by noon or so, you know, she'll kick in and she'll feel better. We took her to a couple different vets, and they looked her over. They didn't see any outward signs. They did some tests, and other than being a little low on potassium, they didn't find anything. The first vet thought there might be a little bit of an infection left over from the spaying, so she was on amoxicillin for 2 weeks, during which time she did feel better. But this is returning, and man, when she has got this down sort of disposition, you would think that she was done. And then when she feels good, she's running around doing great, and so far we're pretty stymied as to what might be going on.
It does sound a little bit stymieing, Don. So tell me, Dan.
Yeah.
Oh, it's Dan.
How long ago was the spay?
Let's see. We got her September 14th. It was like the first, maybe the 10th of October, I think it was.
Okay. So this is over. This is a month and a half ago.
Yeah. This has been like I said, 2 weeks on, or 10 days on amoxicillin. She felt pretty good. And then since then, she's had this. It was one day where she looks a bit. We rushed her to a vet and they couldn't find anything. They did some tests.
If she was better, Dan, on the amoxi, I would give her more antibiotics. I would use the same one, for that matter, if you need to, but give her a good 2-3 weeks worth, because if she got better, that suggests that it's the bacterial infection, okay? And if it's a bacterial infection that came back, or the lethargy came back after you stopped the antibiotic, then tells me the first thing I would do is more antibiotics, and hopefully that'll do it. Now, if the aspirin helps, that implies that there's some inflammation going on, okay?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's okay. The inflammation could be secondary to an infection, or it could be from something else. I mean, if this dog is 1 year old, it's not likely that she would have arthritis, but it's not out of the question. I mean, there could also be growth disturbances in the bones that they get, especially some of these breeds. They have some kind of skeletons that aren't as straight and perfect as you would prefer they were, and they could have that kind of thing going on. So I would say if the antibiotics help, if the anti-inflammatory help, I would give more of them. The decreased potassium, Dan, might be a concern, because that's one of these very important electrolytes in which small changes or small abnormalities, I should say, could have big implications. So I would definitely recheck that potassium to make sure, because the potassium, for instance, is extremely important for the heart to function correctly. And if the heart is not functioning correctly, that's going to sap you of energy big time. So I would definitely recheck that potassium. And lastly, if there were a bacterial infection, it should have been reflected most likely on a complete blood count. You said they did tests. I'd be curious if they did a CBC.
Well, I couldn't tell you that specifically. So what you said, does what you say jibe with the fact that she will be, at times, a full-fledged happy dog whipping around in circles, chasing after things, barking at the cats?
No, it doesn't jibe with that.
She does. That's like, you know, that's a third of her day, and two-thirds of her day, she's ready to die.
So, ready to die.
Well, I'm
but sorry. you had her for a significant amount of time before the surgery. So you have
We got her from she was a stray for a year.
So that might be her normal personality, Dan.
Which
the lethargy when there's not any action going on.
Really? Yeah, but what she so clearly shows, she's like quivering as if she's in pain, and if you touch her in certain spots, she'll yelp as if she's in pain.
Well, maybe she's in pain, or maybe she's been abused and she's got a high sensitivity to something that might hurt.
Well, that's interesting.
And she might display that on an inconsistent fashion?
Well, if she's feeling more secure and comfortable, possibly. But it's also possible, Dan, that she's got some bum joints and so or areas of her body which hurt, in which case I would try to keep track of whether or not there are places on a body that cause it to flinch more than other parts. Any part, then I'd think more of a mental thing, you know, like a... like something's bugging her upstairs type thing. But if it's specific parts, then those are the ones that I would consider x-raying.
Right. Yeah, no, it seems to vary. Sometimes it seems maybe it's her leg. Sometimes it seems
it's intriguing.
Her neck.
Dan, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it.
Good luck, Dan.
All right, thanks.
Bye now. Let's go to Eufaustin. I hope I got that name right. Eufaustin in Saugerties. You're on?
Hi.
Hi. How do you say your name? The phonetics
It's Eufrasain. It's Greek.
Eufrasain. Okay. Got it.
I have a 5-year-old, very healthy Russian blue male cat, and in the last 2 years, I made the mistake, as I think many people do, in thinking that he was coughing up a hairball and finding out that he has asthma. And I have done, you know, we went to my vet, Dr. Rothstein, we did a shot of prednisone that really didn't seem to help as it had in the past. He's having attacks, you know, early in the morning, you know, commonly after he's been sleeping, about 2 attacks a day. I have started giving him some herbs and changing him to, like, a wet food diet, and that seems to help. Like, slippery elm has really helped him. And then I just started giving him some prednisone tablets because I really just wanted to try to give him some relief. And I just don't know... And you may confirm that there's not a lot of options, but I'm always looking to find, is there anything else I could do, and what would be the long-term prognosis for him?
Eufrasain, if he did not respond to the Pred injection most recently, then it would make me wonder whether or not there was something else going on in addition, secondary infection or maybe some kind of... airway disease other than the asthma being otherwise known as an allergic bronchitis. And I would recommend taking an x-ray, number one. Number two, I'd recommend trying some bronchodilators. Those are medications such as theophylline, which open up the airways, make it easier to breathe. Okay. And the wet food diet's good because the canned food's better, I think, than dry food in general. And you didn't say what the Pred pills that you've been trying more recently have done. Have they helped at all?
They did seem to help a little bit, just a little bit. I mean, I know we did x-rays, and my vet was always like, look, it's asthma, it's asthma. He's, you know, he's convinced that it's asthma. It's classic asthma from what I've watched on YouTube, from what I've seen other cats doing. That's exactly what he does. The bronchial dilators, is that something that, you would give them every day? The research that I've done seems to indicate that some of this stuff will actually make things worse with long-term use. Is that correct?
I can't speak to that, Eufrasain. I've never heard that a bronchodilator, which are often used long-term, Because if people or animals have a chronic airway condition, they are just much better quality of life on it, so they just stay on it. But I've never heard of long-term use of a bronchodilator causing problems.
What's the long-term outlook for a cat with asthma?
I think that it's obvious that a really bad asthma attack could potentially be fatal, but the times that they get so bad are very, fortunately, exceedingly rare. So I think that if you have the breathing under control with whatever medication, you're in better shape. But obviously, there's going to be somewhat of an increased risk, which means that there could be an increase or decreased life expectancy.
Mm.
Not necessarily, but possibly. But I think that the alternative, looking into alternative things, you said the slippery elm, looking at the homeopathy, looking into acupuncture, may provide some additional help. So there are some avenues there that you could try. The PRED being the opposite of holistic. But
right.
I say, bottom line, whatever works is
right.
is the most important thing.
Do you see this commonly? I just don't understand where this came from. It just kind of came out of nowhere, and it doesn't seem to be going away.
Yeah, asthma comes out of nowhere, Euphrosyne. And I just saw a really pronounced asthma today. I'm trying to do acupuncture on an asthmatic cat, Josephus. And sometimes it helps a little. But it's not the kind of thing that I expect to ever get rid of.
All right, we're going to have to take a break here, Euphrosyne.
Okay,
but thank you
so much.
Good luck, Euphrosyne.
Appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. One open line at the moment. Get in while you can. 800-348-2551. More with Dr. Sharp on the way.
Support for WAMC comes from Richards Fuel and Heating, East Hampton, Massachusetts, providing high-efficiency gas and oil heating systems to the Pioneer Valley for over 45 years, now expanding into the Westfield area, richardsfuel.com. East Heaven Hot Tubs and Paradise Spa, Northampton, Massachusetts, offering private hot tub room rentals with indoor or outdoor rooftop tubs, massage for couples and individuals, eastheaven.com for reservations. Adventure Outfitters, Hadley, Massachusetts, offering outdoor clothing, camping equipment, cross-country skis, snowshoes, climbing equipment, canoes and kayaks, open evenings until 9, adventureoutfitter.com. Beacon Institute for Rivers and Estuaries of Clarkson University, offering a new Clarkson Master of Science in Engineering Management for Working Professionals, classes in Beacon and online, bire.org for online application. And Center for Better Hearing, Glens Falls, New York, Doctors Susan Boja and Kara Bador, providing comprehensive hearing and hearing aid services for Glens Falls, Saratoga, and beyond, hearingbest.com.
one 800 348. Dr. Sharp is here, but once a month, and it is our Pets and Vets for the month of November. Back to the phones we go. Bonnie in Ashfield, you're on.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have two cats. They're domestic short hair, and they were both adopted. Charlie is a gray tabby, and I'm just wondering, he grows such a thick coat, and he's an indoor cat. Why does he grow such a thick coat when he's not exposed to the outer elements at all?
That's a good question, Bonnie. Some of the elements do sneak in through the window or the door when you come in, and there's definitely a rhythm in the amount of light at this time of year, and other things, the humidity in the air, I'm guessing, that's all it is, that all these factors are impacting them. So it's true that the animals that go out often or daily are going to have a much tougher, thicker coat, but that doesn't mean that the ones that stay inside won't. And there is a rhythm throughout the year, Bonnie, that they'll be shedding more at certain times of year than others. Just this morning, a client told me that the dog, this was a dog, sheds much more to make room, it sounded like, before the summer and before the winter, you know, making room for the new coat, so to speak. So that would be my supposition, Bonnie, that things are affecting the cat, even if they're not as outdoors as others.
Very interesting.
Okay, well, fortunately, all I have to do is get a comb out, and he comes running. He just loves to be brushed.
Beautiful.
So
the combs are great, the brushes. And another thing I really like, Bonnie, is the Furminator. That's a really helpful.
Oh, yes,
what's the Furminator?
The Furminator is like an industrial-strength comb. It's got very sharp teeth that kind of looks like the teeth on a clipper that you would have either in the barber or the vets. So you can't, you have to be careful.
Because yeah, sounds they like could you be, do.
But if you use that, it gets so much more, it gets 5-10 times more hair out per stroke than a comb or a regular brush.
Wow. Well, Bonnie. Yeah,
it works very well. One question about Nico. I have another, it's a black domestic short hair, and he had a very bad start in life. He was left up in a hayloft by his mother when all the other ones were taken into hiding, and a lady found him 2 weeks later. She got him back on goat's milk and stuff, and he has a little heart murmur, but he also weighs about 18 pounds.
Yikes.
I've restricted his food. He's on weight control food. Is there anything else I can do to help him to drop weight?
That's a tough one, Bonnie. I mean, a lot of cats, it's seemingly very resistant to losing weight, and even if you're giving them very, very small amounts of food, it seems like they're, some of them, resistant to weight loss. But I think that if you, in general, the normal cat, if you give an amount that they ought to have for whatever their ideal weight is, they'll eventually get there. I think it is a great idea for you to be using a calorie-restricted food. Some of the foods, for instance, the RD, the Hill's prescription food, has low fat and high fiber. So a lot of animals mm-hmm. get fuller on it, and yet they're losing weight because it's got that low fat, and yet they don't feel as hungry. So that's a great idea. I think just hitting upon the right amount of food to feed. And then secondly, the more exercise you can get into Nico, the better. If you could play with a laser light on the floor that he could chase, or some kind of crumbled up aluminum foil at the end of a 5-foot string that you could, you know, bat around and get him to chase. Or,
He does chase the laser light, and he seems to run around a lot. It's
beautiful.
Just, you know, he's just not losing it. That's
sure.
All.
Sure. Okay. I understand.
Well, good luck, Bonnie. Thanks
good
a
luck,
lot.
Bonnie.
Yep.
I always wondered why cats don't tire of chasing after a laser light. They never catch it. You know?
It's instinctual. It's in their blood. They have to do it. They're compelled.
Okay, so they don't need...
They're predators, and that's prey.
All right, fair enough. Randy in West Monroe. Randy, you're on.
How you doing?
Hey.
I got a question about a cat. It's an older cat my neighbor had, and she's in a home right now because she fell down and stuff, and the cat's probably about, I'm guessing, around 8-9 years old, and it's got claws, and her furniture's like trash, basically. It looks like a cat scratched everywhere. And is there a certain age a cat can not get the claws?
There's no hard and fast rule, Randy, but the clawing cats is politically incorrect. It doesn't mean that I never do it personally, although I know that vets that do decline to do it. And there are municipalities in which it's been outlawed, literally. I think that sometimes you got to do what you got to do, although personally I don't perform the declawing procedure often. Now, the older the cat gets, the more cruel it could be construed to be. So when someone's 6 months old, 5 months old, that kind of kittenhood age, their healing, their response is so much quicker than when they're older that although a lot of people would still say it's inhumane, it's much more a thing of the past quicker, so to speak. Whereas if they're 8 or 9, this is, after all, you got to realize, an amputation of the distal phalanx on all 10 of the front digits. So it could be something that is painful a lot. So you need to use painkillers. Okay, and as well as other appropriate anti-inflammatories sometimes, which you got to be careful about in cats. You know, there is no law that I know of that says they're too old at 8 years of age to do it. But I know that I've resisted doing it with my cat destroying our furniture, and it was because of that. He wasn't a kitten, and my wife kept on telling me to do it, and I kept on resisting, and you know, it's just a tough thing. If it's between euthanasia, okay, in other words, the cat not having a home, getting sent to a shelter, and then not finding a home and being euthanized, that's one way that you could say this is less inhumane to declaw them than to euthanize them.
So I guess you got to think about it. Randy, thanks a lot for the call. Okay, yeah, doctor, here's one from Ellen on Facebook who asks, I have two cats, 9.5-year-old sisters. I've had them for two and a half. Let me put my glasses on. This is a rather long question. Okay. I have two cats, 9.5-year-old sisters. I've had them for 2.5 years. One of them has always been very outgoing and friendly, a real love bunny. Suddenly, from 1 minute to the next, she has become skittish and seems to be terrified of me. She has been hiding in very inaccessible places. She's eating and pooping. She just has had a tremendous personality change. Yesterday, for a few minutes, she seemed normal and sat on my lap and purred with joy. No changes have occurred in the house, nor does her sister show any signs of distress. I don't know. Should I bring her to the vet, which will cause tremendous stress also? She hates the car and howls incessantly, drools, vomits, poops, and pees. I never thought I would say that sentence, all within a few minutes. So what do you think, doctor?
I would say, Ellen, that Ellen might be using a new perfume, or she might be using some piece of clothing which has got a scent to it, which is setting off the cat, something which the cat associates with some previous very negative experience. She's only had the cats for two and a half years. They're 9.5 years old. There were 7 years for them to say, or for that one to be abused by an owner wearing the perfume that Ellen just changed to. It could be anything, but I'm sure it's something. The challenge with an animal, especially a cat, is to try to get inside their head and figure out what it is, because often we just don't know. You got to be a detective. And I hope good luck to Ellen that she can figure it out as far as whether or not it's worthwhile going to a vet. To the extent that she has normal days, that she's not doing that whatsoever, it supports that there is something bothering the cat mentally. And to the extent that it's not inconsistent, that the cat is always skittish and hiding only as far as the owner is concerned,
yeah.
I would take the cat to a vet, because there might be something hurting, or maybe Ellen inadvertently stepped on the cat and doesn't even realize it, and the cat does. It could be anything. It's infinite possibilities.
Well, Ellen, thanks for checking in via Facebook. We'll go back to the phones. Michael in Rhinebeck. Michael, you're on.
Hi there.
Hello.
Hi, Michael.
I've got a 9-year-old male cat, and probably about 6 months ago, started having behavioral changes, and also his gait changed. His back hips sort of seemed to be swaying out a little bit, having a hard time jumping up on things, but also sort of having this sort of trance-like, spaced out. We sort of wave our hands in front of his face or make noises and sort of delayed reaction. And we're wondering if it was Lyme disease, but we took him to the vet, and they said cats don't really get Lyme disease. And they took an x-ray, didn't see much going on, gave him some anti-inflammatories, which didn't really work. So just wondering about the Lyme disease, if indeed they do get it, and, you know, what we can do about it.
Okay.
Well, one thing that you could do about it, Michael, if you really want to explore that possibility, is just put a cat on an antibiotic that would be the best one for Lyme and see what it does. Because if the symptoms are due to Lyme, then they'll usually respond to either doxycycline or even an amoxicillin. Within several days, we usually treat them for a month if it's a dog with symptoms from Lyme, but they'll usually show a response way sooner than a month, and just do an empirical course of treatment. I agree with the other vet, Michael, that it's rare for cats to get Lyme and to be affected by Lyme. I personally, in my patients, I don't think I've ever seen a cat that had symptoms of Lyme, but I guess anything's possible.
Well, what else could it be then?
Oh, it could be a million things. But the fact that the cat's first thing that Michael was talking about is gait changes, back legs splaying out, trouble jumping up, suggests a musculoskeletal problem. He said that the x-rays were negative. I would just want to make sure that the x-rays included the spine, the hips, and the knees, because those are the things that you need to jump up. Whereas if it was trouble jumping down, it would be more of a front leg possibility. As far as the trance-like or spaced out, that is something a little more puzzling. And that starts suggesting the possibility of something going on in the cat's brain. Now, the brain could affect the ability to jump up also. It's not as common, but the brain is connected to the back of the spine, actually. So it's not out of the question, but the trance-like state is a little bit of a monkey wrench there as far as anything. I mean, I do know that Lyme can cause neurological problems, so it doesn't discount the possibility of the Lyme. I would look into testing for the Lyme if you wanted to pursue that possibility, Michael. But try the empirical antibiotics and just see. That's a quick and dirty way to do it.
Yeah. How do I get my, my vet doesn't seem to, do I just
asked my vet. I said, you know, I'd like to try and treat him for Lyme.
Yes.
Is that something that you would just do?
Either ask or implore.
Huh.
Try, you know, and some vets are easier bet than others. I would just say, please, 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 can we just do an empirical course and just make sure that it's not that? The downsides, Michael, to putting the animal on an antibiotic are pretty small, except with the possibility of the most commonly used antibiotic for Lyme in dogs is doxycycline. And cats can sometimes, if they get a pill and it lodges in their throat, can cause big-time trouble.
Yeah.
So you could instead get a liquid formulation crush it up or take it and put it into a meatball or, you know, so it's a powder form. So that's the only, I mean, it's unlikely, but that's the only downside. Otherwise, in general, there's not too much downside to using one of those antibiotics.
Okay. I mean, could it be an ear infection or something as well?
An ear infection would not have caused the cat to have trouble jumping up unless there was some obvious balance problems. An ear infection absolutely can cause balance problems, which would interfere with the cats being able to do that. But you'd see it. I mean, they'd be staggering around. Yeah. They'd be looking drunk. They'd be walking in a circle, head tilted, whatever. And Michael didn't say anything about that.
Okay. Michael, thanks a lot.
Good luck, thanks, Michael. Guys.
Right. Let's go to Rob in Woodstock. Rob, you're on with Dr. Ron Scharf.
Oh, hey.
Hey.
Hold on. I'm going to switch the audio path because I'm on my
All right.
earphone.
Stand by while he switches the audio.
Okay. Can you hear me better?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Better.
I wanted to know if cats and dogs can carry scabies mites.
Absolutely. Totally, yes.
What are scabies mites?
Okay,
they can.
So, they are a mite, M-I-T-E, which causes sarcoptic mange, which in people is called scabies. Scabies is an example of a zoonotic disease, something people can catch from animals, intensely itchy, and it could be a very big deal, but it's easily fixed. So what do they have, Rob? I mean, they would have pretty obvious symptoms if they had scabies.
Well, I had them because my daughter gave them to me, and I got rid of them. But I just wanted to know if it's a possibility they can be hanging out in the house. Now, I put diatomaceous earth all over the floors, sprinkled it on the floors and stuff. And then one of the side effects was that my cat started sneezing, so I vacuumed it all up, you know. But I'm just wondering if that would kill them in the house or what.
No.
That's what they say.
No. I'm personally not a big fan of the diatomaceous earth, Rob, because animals that ingest it could have big-time problems. It's like eating glass almost.
Uh-huh.
It's not good.
Wow.
Silica, whatever it is. But
the food grade, they say you can eat. I mean, I actually took a glass of it. It's supposed to improve your digestion, but that's...
I'll defer to you. I mean, that might be the case. I'm unaware of that. But it's an intriguing question. Can it be in the house so that the cats can get it from animals? You see, the cats get it from the humans. I'm usually looking at it from the other way around, warning people about things that we humans can catch from animals. I'm assuming, Rob, that if we can get it from them, they can get it from us. So I think it would be possible. However, they are not free-living parasites. So, Rob, these things are in the skin. And that's how they get diagnosed. And it's not an easy diagnosis sometimes. I learned that it'll take six skin scrapings before you'll even see evidence of sarcoptic mange mite.
Why six? I mean, why? That's an odd number.
Well, at Cornell, that's what they taught me, that if you just do one or two skin scrapings, they hide so much compared to there's a different kind of mange called Demodex, which you'll find first time out of the box. Every time, just about every time. But the scabies are hard to find.
Yeah.
It's the way that they're situated within the dermis, within the skin. And I don't know where they came up with the six.
Yeah.
But I never conclude a negative scabies based on just one skin scraping.
Rob, does that help?
Well, yeah, I just want to know how to get rid of them in the animals if they have them. How do I treat them on the animals?
So there's two or three ways, Rob. If you want to talk something that's labeled for use in animals, the only thing which is labeled for the purpose of getting rid of scabies is either lime sulfur dips, which are very inconvenient. Every week or two, you got to give them this real stinky dip, and it could have side effects. It's something that has not been used that much lately since other things have come along. But most of the other things do not have their label for that purpose. Now, the other thing which has a label for that purpose is one or two of the heartworm medications, believe it or not, can also take care of scabies, but that is only for dogs. I'm not referring to cats in that way. What we'll usually do, Rob, is use a product used for cows. It's ivermectin. The brand name is called Ivomec, I-V-O-M-E-C, and it can be given orally. It can be given injectably, and it's got the potential, if it's used in the wrong way, at the wrong dose, of causing major problems neurologically, big time. Or if it's used in a collie-type dog. So I'm talking collies, border collies.
Poodle, you said?
Yeah. Poodles are fine. Poodles can handle ivermectin okay. And usually what you do is you give them the cow dose of the ivermectin a certain number of times. And every week or two, I would have to look it up. And usually that takes care of it after several of those administrations.
Hmm.
You apply it internally. And now, how would I know if they have them, though?
Oh, you'd have obvious symptoms. They would be intensely itchy. They'd have bald spots. They'd have very red, angry-looking skin.
Yeah, they're not. I think I really treated it well.
It would not be subtle. The most common thing, Rob, in a dog, I don't see any cats with scabies, although I think they can get it. I've just never seen it. The dogs, the hallmark is you'll see that the backs of their ears, they're called the pinna, the flap parts. The backs will be bald and crusty and thickened, and so will their elbows. It's very characteristic. It's what they call a pathognomonic. It's almost a pathognomonic way to diagnose it.
Interesting. Well, Rob, good luck. Right. We appreciate the call. We're going to take a break here and get back with more of your calls for Ron Scharf, 800-348-2551. Back in a flash.
Support for WAMC comes from Healthy Living Market and Cafe, working to support local agriculture and their communities with organic products, community outreach, and jobs, opening Saratoga Springs 2013, healthylivingmarket.com. Maria College, Albany, New York, offering RN baccalaureate completion program, associate degrees, and professional certificate programs, day, evening, weekend, and online classes, mariacollege.edu. Boyden and Perron, Amherst, Massachusetts. Offering lawn and garden equipment, parts and service to customers throughout Western Massachusetts, a family-owned business for over 50 years, boydenandperron.com. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York. Providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, glaucoma, management and specialty contact lens fitting, where eyewear is an art, Facebook or 845-336-6310. And Harbrook Fine Windows, Doors and Hardware, Albany, since 1955, Windows and Doors by Marvin and Integrity, offering design, installation, and green products, Showroom 47 Railroad Ave, 800-735-1427.
one 800 348 2551 is our telephone number. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. It's our regular Pets and Vets show for November. And I was filling in on the roundtable last week or the week before, and our news editor of the day was Judy Patrick from the Schenectady Gazette. And she brought up, and you just mentioned it to me, and it rang a bell in my head, canine influenza, an issue now or not?
That's a good question, Ray. And it's one that I've been thinking about for several years. The canine influenza is a new virus that was discovered in 2005 in track dogs in Florida. And it didn't take much time for it to migrate up to the New York City area. Okay. However, I've not heard until recently that it was anywhere in this capital region area. And, you know, as a vet, you want to formulate your policy recommendations for what vaccines you recommend to your animals. And I personally am very on the conservative side, and I give fewer vaccines than a lot of my colleagues.
Yeah.
I don't go that often on distemper every 4 years or even five sometimes. And so I try to make sure that whatever vaccine vaccines I recommend there's a good reason for, and that they're only given to the animals that are at risk for those. So, for instance, I don't recommend feline leukemia vaccine for an indoor cat that's never going to see another cat. And I don't recommend leptospirosis for a dog that's never going to go into water or go where wildlife are. So this canine influenza, every year, I ask my colleagues at the annual meeting, has anyone seen any canine flu? And every year, including this last month, everyone says no, that they haven't. But then last week in the Gazette, there was a piece on a local vet who was presented with two dogs that were new to the area that were sick for canine influenza. Now, the problem with canine influenza is twofold. Number one, it can look like kennel cough. Kennel cough is very common.
Yeah.
And other than how highly contagious it is, it's almost never a serious problem. It's only a serious problem if you own a kennel or a vet hospital or a place where other dogs are, because if you get one kennel cough in there, then everyone can get it and you have somewhat of a nightmare.
Right.
But it runs its course after 2 to 3 weeks and they get better. And like I said, unless someone's immunocompromised or sick otherwise, the the kennel cough does not cause a problem. So the problem with the canine flu is that it could be misdiagnosed as something that's not a serious health problem. And then if it's not treated, it can progress to a pneumonia and an animal can die. So literally, the dog can die if they're not treated. Usually, if they're given supportive care, which means fluid therapy intravenously and the right antibiotics, okay, they get better.
Yeah.
Most often is what I've heard. Though, I imagine that there could be some virulent enough strains that even that might not be the case. So
what will you do? Will you recommend immunization now or
yes,
just keep your eyes
open?
Well,
no. What I'm doing is, first of all, I'm gauging interest in my clients, and I've been talking to my clients since this piece came out, of how much risk the dog has. Now, what I consider risk is a dog that's seeing other dogs a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. So this could be dogs going to daycare, dogs going to show trials, dogs going to agility competitions, that kind of thing. Dogs that board a lot or travel to endemic type areas as being considered as those good candidates for getting vaccinated for the canine influenza. Animals that are indoor most of the time, dogs that don't see any other dogs, I would not recommend it. So that's how I'm approaching it for now. I'm not recommending it across the board, but dogs that are at risk, I'm having those discussions.
All right. Well, I'm sure you'll be following it, and next month we'll get an update on that. Let's go to Karen in Massachusetts. Karen, you're on.
Hi, Dr. Sharp and Ray. Thanks for having a chance to talk to you. I have a cat. Actually, I don't have a cat, but my friend has a cat that was given to him by a family who moved out of town. I don't think they moved to get away from the cat, but it might be so. The cat is less than 5 years old. It's a yellow tabby, I guess. I think that's what you'd call it. And it was hit by a car when the other family was still caring for it. And he survived that. But he has some personality traits that are making it difficult for my friend to deal with him. At first, he let him be in the house, he could go wherever he wanted, and he did a little cat door so he could let himself in and out because he would come in and out a lot during the night, disturb his sleep. And he didn't learn how to use the cat door, so my friend tried to push him through it, and now the cat won't talk to him at all. in fact, if I'm there visiting, the cat will come to me and, hello, hello, hello. But if my friend walks by, he'll go outdoors. He'll just leave. And so now he's an outdoor cat all the time. He's not allowed inside at all. And he is not friendly, particularly. I mean, he's friendly to me, but I take a lot of time to make that happen. But used to accept a little bit of a pat, but then something would happen and he'd start to bite. And since he's an outdoor cat and doesn't respond, he doesn't respond to treats, there's no way to really coax him. I mean, I can get him to come, but I'm not around him much.
Okay.
Am I concerned that here he is living in the neighborhood totally without, there's no protection for him, and he's out about, and he has this tendency to bite.
Okay.
And I'm wondering about that being a concern. Is that something, I understand you can have responsibilities of a cat, bites somebody.
I see. You mean legal responsibilities? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's hear from the doctor.
Okay, Karen. So, although in general cats are harder to train and mold compared to dogs, they are definitely moldable. And the reason I say that is because I have clients that will take feral cats in and give them enough time, a year, 2 years, 3 years, and you look at this cat, it's a different cat. They were able to turn this cat around. Basically, they're convincing the cat that not all people need to be they don't need to be afraid of all people. And the way that you do that, you touched upon it. You mentioned something which is key. You said you're putting a lot of time into getting the cat used to you. That's what it takes. It takes tincture of time and effort, okay? So what he used to do is you said that you couldn't tell what this cat liked other than just going outdoors. There's got to be something the cat likes. And what you need to do is tell your friend that he's got to find out what kind of food that is.
He's tried everything.
And put it outside and coax the cat to come in. And then keep on plying the cat with whatever it is, whether it's a meat or a cheese or a fish.
Nothing.
I tell you, there's got to be something which is floating this cat's boat. And it might be something else. I mean, it could be a non-food item, but there has got to be something. And your job, your friend's job, is to find out what it is and then to flood the cat with it. And then when the cat starts coming inside, you get the cat to come over to the couch that you're sitting on because some of that special treat is there. And then you eventually put the treat or whatever it is closer and closer to you so that the cat has to eventually touch you. And then once you've established contact, you put the thing in your lap. And then don't keep pushing. I would just do small, usually I say small bites, but in this case I don't want to use that term. In small little steps, what you want to do is get the cat to accept being touched. And then once you've done that for 5 seconds, you walk away, you end the session, you don't push it. And then you keep on doing it and get the cat to accept it for 10 seconds. And then it's a long, drawn-out, tedious process that could be extremely rewarding. But you got to be a detective first, Karen, and you got to figure out what the buttons are that most excite that cat.
Okay, Karen,
it's doable. I need to know, do you feel that that's an issue of concern, the cat's
the bites?
The biting, even me, who
is
very tender with.
Yeah, that's why I said you should do very small steps, because if a lot of cats, and it doesn't have to be cats with this questionable history, they are a little psycho because they enjoy your petting them, you're petting them on the back, you're petting them, and then all of a sudden something changes and they whip around and they bite their owner.
Yeah.
Okay? And that is something that no one knows why they do it, but what it tells me is that the human has to be the one that determines the length and tenor of the interchange, of the emotional transaction, so to speak. So you always want to quit before the cat thinks it's had enough.
Okay.
You always want to keep them coming back for more.
Karen, thanks a lot for the call. All right. And how long of a process is this? You mentioned
endless. It takes a long time, Ray. But I've had clients that have I once had a cat that came in last year. This male feral cat was so wild that he was literally bouncing off walls. He was literally going from that vertical wall to that vertical wall, glancing off the owner's head, going to another wall, and that cat is now not feral.
Wow.
It's now coming under control.
So it's like My Fair Lady in many ways.
Takes a while. It takes at least a year to get them. If you're doing it right, it takes a long time.
All right, let's go to Hannah in Hyde Park. Hannah, you're on.
Hi. I have a 7-year-old female dog that had a bad bladder infection over the summer, and so she was on two sets of antibiotics for about a month. And so I brought her, when I brought her in for the follow-up, she was, the bacteria was gone, but she still has a high level of struvite crystals because her pH level is high.
Mm-hmm.
And so the vet recommended putting her on a diet, but he wasn't happy with putting her on like the science diet. He said it wasn't, you know, as healthy as the diet that she's on now, which was the blue buffalo, the lamb and rice.
The vet liked the blue buffalo more than the science diet?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because she's also allergic to chicken, so she can't have chicken. So I was just wondering if there were any other diets that I could put her on to help with the Shoebrake crystal problem, because it's still obviously a problem. And he said we need to get that under control.
Yeah, Hannah, there are definitely diets. And I could give you the three companies that I use, and I think there are more than that. But the company that makes the Science Diet, Hills, makes a veterinary line, a prescription line. And the foods that you would use with those are either CD or SD. The SD would be if the struvites clump together into stones, in other words, things that could be seen on the X-ray. The CD is if you have the crystals that have not yet formed stones.
Okay.
They both come in dry and canned, though, in general. This problem is way better with canned food than dry food. But the Royal Canin Company makes a similar one. I think it's called S/O. And the Purina Company makes a similar one as well. So if at all possible you stay with canned food, you want them to drink as much as possible. There's way more water content in the canned food than the dry. And you could also use an acidifier to keep the pH lower. But you have to watch out that you don't make it too low. You don't want it to be too high. It's got to be just right. So in general, the food is the way to go. And you don't, in general, have to use an acidifier if they're on the food doing fine.
All right, Hannah, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it very much. All right, a couple from Facebook here as we wrap up, Dr. Scharf. Scotchy on Facebook asks, my dog has fleas for the first time. She's 5 years old. We've been using Frontline on her and our three cats with much success until now. What non-toxic methods can I use to rid our house of fleas?
So, Scotchy, the Frontline's okay, but it's been around long enough that we've seen cases of resistance. And there are two products that I personally use that I think are the best, and they're better than the Frontline. One is called Vectra, V-E-C-T-R-A. It's a topical, so similar to the Frontline. And that's something that could be used in dogs for fleas and ticks, and in cats for just fleas. Now, you got to be careful. You don't use the Vectra for dogs and a cat because it could be toxic.
Mm-hmm.
But the Vectra is the best topical that I know of for fleas. But something that I'm very excited about is an oral medication for both dogs and cats that'll kill fleas, and it'll kill all adult fleas within 4 hours. It's amazing. And I've seen very few bad reactions.
Yeah.
And that product is called Comfortis, C-O-M-F-O-R-T-I-S. And I like it so much, actually, that it just recently came out combined with a heartworm medication, the same one that's an Interceptor, and the combination is called Trifexis for dogs. And that's one that I'm using as my preferred heartworm preventive because it also takes care of fleas. Fleas can carry diseases that we humans could be susceptible to as well. But you got to realize something, Scotchy, that is very important that a lot of people don't know about. And that is that the adult flea is only 5% of the population, meaning there are eggs and larvae in the house and there are pupae in the house. The pupal form, it's like a cocoon, and they don't like cold and dry. Mm. So if there are pupal form, life form eggs in pupae rather in the house at this time of year, they may stay there and not turn into adults until it starts turning warm and humid again,
right,
which means April or May, which means you should continue with whatever product at least for the next 6 months.
Okay, and then Scotchy asks what non-toxic methods can be used to rid the house of fleas.
Okay,
and so maybe you can talk in our last 30 seconds here.
The most non-toxic ingredient that I could think of is a vacuum cleaner, okay? Because you could vacuum up the eggs and the larvae that are in the carpets, the rugs, and the upholstery. The bedding you could just throw into the washer and dryer. But everything else, you can vacuum and vacuum again and vacuum again. But just because you vacuum them up doesn't mean they're killed. What you need to do is the first time throw out the vacuum bag sealed up, and then each subsequent time, you could keep some mothballs in the vacuum bag or a cut up flea collar or something that'll kill them when they get into the vacuum bag.
Right. Yeah.
Okay? So that you don't have a breeding colony in the vacuum. But the vacuum is the most non-toxic flea control product I know. The bombs and the premise sprays, I do not recommend. They're toxic. It's a toxic cloud in your house. You got to put away all the food preparation surfaces and everything. And it's just, I've used them before many years ago. And I think if you use the monthly products for the next 6 months, there will be nothing left and should be non-toxic. non-toxic.
Okay, well, that'll have to do it for today. We apologize to Cheryl on Facebook, who had a question for Dr. Sharp. And if you were on the line and didn't make it through, well, maybe we'll get you in next time. We really appreciate everybody who called. And Dr. Sharp, a splendid job, as always. Dr. Ron Sharp of the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna. Support comes from Empire Exhibits and Displays, Albany, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive displays, and commercial casework for trade shows, events, museums, and corporate interiors. EmpireExhibits.com. HMT at the Spa Little Theater, presenting The Wizard of Oz December 7th through December 16th in the Saratoga Spa State Park. HomemadeTheater.org. The Unitarian Universalist Congregations of the Capital Region, teaching children how to make a difference through social action and volunteerism. CapitalRegionUU.org. And Ruggies Subaru in the Village of Rhinebeck. New Subarus and over 150 pre-owned vehicles, specializing in Subaru and GM vehicle service and parts. RuggiesSubaru.com. Thanks again for joining us today. Zach Malloy handled the controls. Colleen O'Connell answered your calls. Our producer is Patrick Donges. I'm Ray Graff. On tomorrow's show, oh, it's birding. Rich Guthrie will be here. Stay tuned now for a news update.